Hey everybody, welcome to the Faith and Fandom Podcast. This is Hector Mirai with Faith and Fandom, and today I am joined by Victor Slaughter of a few different nerdy enterprises. And Victor, tell us who you are.
So like I said, my name is Victor Slaughter, and
That's, you know, the most dope 1980s wrestling name.
Yeah, I've always been told that I was supposed to be a football player or something like that.
Okay.
But no, I didn't do anything sports wise, and I guess that's why we're here talking about nerd stuff. But yeah, I guess so far as the nerd side of my life is concerned, had a card shop in Pembroke called True Haven Cards and Board Games, and that was a very fun adventure that we went along. All
right, so for card shop, just for the people that don't fully grasp that, talk about what True Haven like actually was, what it did, what your amenities are like. Tell us what it was.
Sure. So, pretty much, I mean, it's a building with a bunch of tables in it, and that's...
So, you weren't purveying baseball cards, or...
No, not baseball cards. So, tell us a little bit. Yeah. Magic the Gathering, Yu-Gi-Oh!, Pokemon, those type of card games. Of course, you know, we have board games as well. We didn't have our player base wasn't huge on board games. It was mainly Magic the Gathering players and Yu-Gi-Oh! Players. It's like, what would be happening there any hour of the day, some match was going on at the table. And, of course, you know, we'd have events every single night of the week, running different tournaments for the different games or different styles of tournaments within them. Yeah, I mean, other than that, you know, you've got, of course, the merchandise so they can buy the cards there. You've got tons of snacks. Everyone's hanging there out there all day, so sodas and noms and whatnot.
So you opened up a card shop, and for those that don't know the area, Pembroke is a college campus. So you opened up a card shop in a college town in the poorest county in the state of North Carolina.
Yeah.
And it was just you and a couple friends, right?
Right.
So how did that decision come about?
Yeah. So far as business practices are concerned, like marketing and financial stuff, like this is not a smart idea. Like this is just not something you do. No type of business loan, nothing like that. Each one of us threw $300 in the pot each and started off, you know, with a $900 investment into this business. Very bare bones type of thing. But, I mean, honestly, we liked playing the game. We didn't like traveling all the way to Fayetteville every weekend to play. So we were like, hey, you know, let's just open up a shop, at least just for us. There's enough people that hang out on campus that also play that I think there's a bit of a customer base there where we can at least keep the lights on and stay inside and, hey, play Magic all day.
So how long was your shop actually open?
We stayed in business for 2 full years. And at the end of the second year, we decided to just go ahead and shut the doors, be able to pull out while we're still in the green. And be able to take a little bit of money home in our pockets, which, you know, it wasn't never about the money. Like I said, it was always just, you know, we want someone to play the game, but I didn't want to go in debt off of it, you know. And going into that third year, what it was looking like, the Magic community was sort of dying out, and that was a lot of stuff that Magic themselves was doing within their set rotation that our community just, like, they weren't a fan of it. So they just sort of stopped playing the game. Our Yu-Gi-Oh! Community, however, was, like, flourishing at that point, and I really feel bad for them that, like, we did end up shutting our doors because, like, that really put them in a tough spot. But Heroes Hideout opened up, like, almost immediately as we were shutting out in South Carolina. So, like, all of our Yu-Gi-Oh! Players just, like, exodus.
Where's that at?
It's in South Carolina. I think it's in Florence.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you and some friends from a local college town threw some money into a pot.
Yep.
You opened a card shop with and you didn't open up with a lot of merch or retail when you started. You literally just had
We got one box that you could hold it in your hand that had merchandise in it. that's what we started off with on our shelves. And then of course some things within our own collection.
So you managed to open up a shop with three people with a minimal investment.
Yeah.
You stayed open for 2 years and you didn't come out in debt.
Yeah, didn't come out in debt every single day. You're able to pay yourselves. I mean, we weren't, you know, paying our own bills per se off of it. But, you know, we're able to take at least 10, 20 bucks home a day or, you know, multiply that by 30. You know, you're getting that much a month. And it's just, it was just pretty cool, man. It was a nice environment to be in.
I just got to say, that's a great success story. I know you're not still doing it, but the fact that you open up a shop for fun.
Yeah.
You're like the one punch man of nerd entrepreneurs.
You're like, I'll take that as a compliment.
I do this for fun. I'm a hero. You are a hero for fun.
Yeah.
So, and you know, you doing that honestly has always been one of the sparks of like, I can totally run a comic book shop.
Yeah.
Now, from what I'm gathering though, you know, talking to my friend Crispy that managed Ultimate and Fate in the Raleigh region for a while, comic book shops on the flip side are like a minimum retail investment of like $3,000 a month.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And
that's not bad.
But of like, that's how much you have to put out each month.
Right.
Just to keep going.
Well, fair enough. Yeah.
And I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
That's scary.
Yeah.
It's like, you can buy a few decks of cards and,
sure.
And have some, like, sell Twinkies and water and be down for the cause. All right. So, moving forward with that.
Well, I think just to give you a little bit of hope on that, like, our shipment costs, like, it definitely would, I mean, goodness gracious. I think we're probably ordering $5,000 to $7,000, you know, worth of stuff a month.
Really?
And rotating that back out. So it didn't really make sense the way it worked. I mean, because...
So you guys were actually, I don't want to say trafficking like you're dealing drugs or anything, but you were trafficking like more than $5,000 worth of stuff a month and still coming out?
I think like in our busiest months, yeah.
Wow.
I think like our weakest month was like 2,000 to 3,000, something like that. Now our markup rate was pretty low. So I think that's what really helped. I mean, like, we're rivaling everywhere. Like, you know, we're cheaper than Walmart prices. We're cheaper than, like, everywhere. Like, even cheaper than being able to buy online. So that allowed stuff to just rotate really quickly. So
when you're doing it for fun and not just for actually, like, market value, it's a lot easier.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. That is hopeful. I don't know. It's just that initial, like, let's bite the bullet. But I think if I found enough people to actually invest in it, it could be dope. So just before we go on to some of your other stuff, like, do you ever have the desire to do that again?
It comes up every now and again. Like, I'm like sitting there, you know, and just like, man, that was really fun. Like, I really enjoyed those days. Like, you know, maybe I could do that again. So yeah, it does. It comes up. You know, me and my wife, we're in a full-time ministry now. So really it's kind of trying to find that balance. Like, okay, if I were to do it again, how could it be a ministry opportunity? And if it's not a ministry opportunity, you know, is it really something I should be pursuing? Not that, you know, games are bad. I mean, every Thursday, me and a group of friends, we all get together and play games and then have a Bible study. So, yeah. You know, I'm not knocking, you like, gamers and Christians can't exist in the same world, obviously, but yeah.
Well, so like if my shop happens, I'll tag you in and we can, you can manage the, games side of the world.
Yeah, there you go.
And we can open up that space to some small groups and, you know, have some discussions and stuff in there. Yeah,
that'd be your way of tempting me to do it.
Yeah. What? No. That's crazy talk. You know, you'd have all the table space you need to do whatever, but, you know, whatever.
No, actually, I feel like it would be really dope. I would love to talk more about that and figure out what that would actually look like.
So you heard it here first. So that's not your only venture into professional nerd world though.
Right.
So tell you make games now.
Yeah.
So, not just you have a thing, but like tell us what that looks like.
Yeah. So Vandal Entertainment Studios is our company.
Vandal Entertainment Studios.
Yeah. Vandal Entertainment Studios. That's okay. Right. And you check that out on Facebook. It's kind of our only real social media spot we got. And that's /VES Games. Is what you just type into the URL. Or, you know, just look it up and it's like a black and white VE logo. And actually that's what started the card shop in the first place.
Okay.
It wasn't called Vandal at the time. It was just me and another buddy of mine, Chandler. He's also part of the company. And we were creating a card game, which was called Conquer at the time. But now it's called Potentia. And we heard about these other dudes who were talking about opening up a card shop. So we kind of... we also use that as an opportunity, like, hey, you know, we might as well do this as well. Jump on board with them and, you know, make this whole thing happen. Have a spot where we can play Magic, but also have a spot where we can potentially sell this game to our customers. Have a spot where we can test it with people and that sort of thing. So
built-in market.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that adventure continued after we closed the doors of True Haven and really solidified Vandal. You know, got the business license stuff, all that type of stuff situated, trademarks and all the good legalities of it, and has since then, our card game that I mentioned, Potentia, is not released in a playable or not a I don't know, I guess a playable form or whatever. It's not like fully released. It's like in a prototype stage.
Okay.
So we kind of are selling that like to our local friends or people we come across. Like, hey, if you want to copy the game, you know, we can get it to you. That sort of thing. But our board game, that one is, it's ready to go, and that's on the Game Crafter. And the Game Crafter is a pretty cool site, if you've never heard of it, where essentially you can go in there and plug in all your files for your game, what your box looks like, what your pieces look like, and then they just print it. Like, it's just print by order. So if someone wanted to order the game, they just go onto the website, order it, and then it gets shipped to them.
Okay.
Versus us having to spend a lot of money up front to order like 1,000 copies and then try to sell those 1,000 copies.
Well, I mean, it's very similar to the printing structure I deal with Faith and Fandom, that literally there aren't copies sitting around.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of my favorite things about Amazon. They lie to you.
Yeah.
You know, like if...
like 6 left in stock.
6 left in stock. Stuff like, no, there's not. I remember like what a... Like every... I watch it every time because it's just one of the things that makes me giggle. That when I print a new book and it just hits the... Like it just is birthed into the world. Like there's not a single physical copy in the world outside of the proof in my hand. They say, you know, automatically day one, the first day it hits Amazon, it's like... 6 left in stock. 4 from these other sellers. I'm like, no, there's not. You lie.
That's crazy.
But it's a marketing ploy, and
sure.
But the thing is, the other sellers are Amazon. Undershell things.
Right, so right.
Whatever. Yes. I see
so,
you guys.
So they're not lying.
They're not lying, but they're super deceiving you.
Sure.
Your board game.
Yeah.
Do you have any aspirations for that going further or doing different things, expansions? Yeah. Like, what's up with that?
Definitely. So the board game is called Stormstrike.
Okay.
If you look it up on the, if you go to thegamecrafter.com, you can search Stormstrike or you can do /storm-strike.
Okay.
Once you get to the board game section. So Stormstrike is a strategy game. It's 2 or 4 players. You can totally play it with 3 players if you want, but I just don't recommend it.
Okay.
Nobody wants to destroy the other person. It's like these two will be picking on that guy and then they feel bad for him, so they stop. And it's just sort of a never ending process.
You might just play with nice people. I'm pretty sure a lot of people enjoy
it. That's probably what I do. I just play with nice people. So yeah, that's been our experience, is best played in either 1v1 mode or 2v2 mode.
Okay.
Free for all is an option, but I personally am not a fan of it. It's a sort of like a real-time strategy, but of course it's a board game, so it is turn-based strategy. There are 4 different factions in the base game, and all of them come with their own abilities, the way that the fighters work, the way that their perks activate, the way that you level up. And that's the other cool thing. Like throughout the game, like you continue to level up. You gain experience points by destroying stuff, and then you gain more powers. You build your base right out the gate at the very beginning of the game, and all throughout the game you're running over top of your opponent's base and, you know, destroying them.
Okay.
And so that's the base game. And we do already have 2 expansions released for it.
Okay.
So the base game, it comes with the 4 factions, the aggressive faction, defensive, economic, and tactical. And, you know, those all have really awesome, unique abilities. And then the first expansion was Magic Freaks, and that adds wizards to the game, that adds spells and mana and, like, portals where you can literally just warp right into your opponent's base and just start destroying their headquarters. So that's fun. And then
sounds like a board game version of Command and Conquer.
Yeah, it's got a lot of like Command and Conquer is a good one to compare it to, StarCraft, Warcraft.
Okay.
Those type of games, yeah. And then like I said, the last expansion that we just released is the Holy Faction. This introduced clerics, Templars, and angels. And the angels are ridiculously powerful. Like you can't even get an angel until you're level 3, and you only get 1 angel. And like that's just how powerful they are. Is
okay.
The reason why that whole balancing thing is there.
Okay.
So, they're fun. And, you know, the Templars, they get resurrected by clerics, and instead of, like, going to your discard pile, you just immediately, boom, get your dudes back onto the field, and you're right back in their base.
What would you say it would be the average fan base for your game? Like, if you say, if you like this, you'd like our game.
Yeah, I think, like I said, Command and Conquer style games, Risk, chess even, just anything where it's kind of really kind of tactical strategy where you need to be moving your pieces in the right way, planning your attacks out the right way. War Machine and Warhammer are 2 other big ones that this game would be similar to.
Okay.
But of course, this is on a hex grid, So whereas like Warhammer and War Machine is just sort of just on the tabletop.
Yeah.
You know, so this is your dudes can move up to three spaces and then they can do their attack and that sort of thing. So it certainly has its differences, but I would say if you like War Machine, and I love War Machine and I love Storm Strike, so I think those two pair well for each other.
Is Vandal, like, what would you say in the current status of Vandal is? Is it, like, active development? Is it, like, we're kind of in a holding phase? Like, where would you say your company is right now?
Yeah, I'd say active development. So Stormstrike, we're not currently working on any other expansions, but there are plans for other expansions. Potentia, however, like I said, is in prototype stage, and we've got a couple friends who that's been printed out for them. They've been playing, and we've been learning a lot through them playing. And we're actually going to be meeting up sometime this week to kind of rework the way the card pool works. Because what we notice is that within one faction, so you've got these kind of robots and cyborgs and all this type of stuff. And there's three different options you can go with it. But each option, like one of them has a lot of versatility, whereas the other two don't have so much versatility. And that's okay. Because there's so few cards in the box, so that, you know, the players not have to spend a ton of money. So we're trying to figure out, all right, how do we not make the game more expensive, but fix that issue. And we've got a lot of really good stuff in plan for how that's going to be fixed and making sure it's customizable to each and every person.
Okay. So 5 years from now.
Ooh.
Like, I know your life is in transition. You're a newlywed. You're, you know, pursuing some full-time ministry stuff. I mean, your life is kind of in transition, but, like, let's say, just on the professional nerd level of things,
sure.
Where do you want to see you and Vandal in 5 years?
Me and Vandal in 5 years. I would definitely like to see Potentia obviously released at that point. The big thing that's holding us back is artwork. So if you're an artist, reach out to us. We want to be able to bring you on board in some type of way. So we can get this artwork done, because there's like 200... you know, some different cards in the game, and all of them need unique art, and I think we got like 30 done so far. So there's a long ways to go before we get all the art completed, but once we get there, we'll make those final tweaks to the balancing, and then we could be in a release state. And at that point, we're trying to build from local and onwards instead of going worldwide immediately, or even nationwide immediately. So like the Raleigh area, Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, and all that is kind of where we're starting at. And that's where we really want to build our local fan base, where there's going to be tournaments going on at stores like, for example, Atomic Empire, Game Theory, and, you know, the other stores that are up that way. And we, you know, we've been having conversations with the owners of those stores, and like they're excited for it. They're ready for us to kind of move in and be on their shelves.
Okay.
So,
you know, our resources and time and efforts and stuff are limited in what we're doing.
Yeah.
What percentage of you do you feel like the professional nerd end is getting? Like, there's 100% of Victor.
Uh-huh.
Like, what percentage is that getting?
Oh, goodness.
I mean, I'm not...
So, like, how much am I committing towards Vandal and, like, making sure that sort of thing happens?
Like, right now. Just in your life, right now.
I would probably shamefully have to say a little bit lower on the low end of things. Like, I mean, less than 25%. Okay. Is really getting my full attention.
Oh, dude, life is seasonal. I mean, it's not always going to be 100%, but
yeah, for sure. So. Yeah.
Okay. Tell me about your partners.
So partners are Chandler and Melanie, and they're both in the Raleigh area, and that's kind of like a little bit difficult, right? Because we are separate. So whenever we're having our meetings and stuff, you know, it's online, and you know, like through Facebook Messenger or whatever, Skype and whatnot. But you know, they're awesome partners. Me and Chandler are the ones, we started this thing from the beginning, designing the card game just out of fun again. And then we decided, okay, let's take this thing a step further. Yeah. And we brought Melanie on with us. She is like crazy, like analytical and like kind of the marketing side of things and like the spreadsheets and whatnot. And she's super smart when it comes to that. And while she's definitely a nerd, she's less of a nerd than me and Chandler, and that keeps us balanced. Because, like, me and Chandler will have a meeting, and we're going on for 3 hours nerding out over some dumb lore point in the story. We're like, oh, man, this would be so cool if, like, Commandantor Bane, you know, this, you know. I mean, I'm not going to get too far into it, you know. So we go crazy, and then Melon's just like, hey guys, let's get back to the meeting.
Okay.
So it's good to have her on board in a lot of different ways. Yeah. So.
So you are also not, you know, that this isn't your only dynamic to your life. You're also, you serve in ministries, you work in collegiate ministry. You play an active role in your faith and stuff. How would you say that this stuff, like the nerd end of your life, how does that play into your faith walk, your journey and what you're doing, the people you interact with? How does that impact that?
Yeah, I think it's just natural living your life. I think anything when it comes to, you know, that sort of true faith, you're just going to go out in the world and you're going to walk and you're going to talk and you're going to hang out with friends and whatnot. And, you know, Christ is just going to naturally be introduced into that. And I found, you know, with hanging out with Chandler from time to time, you know, we end up having these, you know, type of conversations. You know, I'm not going to fully obviously go put his beliefs on blast, but, you know, we're able to, you know, connect with each other and communicate, even though we do have differing beliefs. Or like at the card shop, man, like there are so many people that like had like True Haven testimonies where like they said that they were in a really dark spot in their lives and then they stepped into True Haven and it turned their lives around, like changed. I mean, I've had 3 friends approach me that were in a suicidal position before coming to True Haven, and like it just completely changed their life. Just the friendship, the hospitality we provided, and just the love that we showed them is just like, wow. You know, I'm really thankful that I stumbled across this. And you know, that's kind of, it's a huge thing. You know, it's one of those things that I guess happens on accident when you're just naturally living your life and you're just loving on people and you're in the environment that you're comfortable in, which for me is inside of a card shop. People are going to receive that love.
So do you feel like there's any point that your faith has kind of hindered what you did with that stuff? Was there, like, do you feel like at any point that that was a, like, it set you back, or that it was just a, like, you, any kind of negative with that?
I guess the only negative that I can really think of off the bat is, you know, at True Haven we had a no cussing rule, and most people respected that.
Really, I didn't realize.
Yeah,
that.
Exactly, no cussing rule. Yeah.
So your card shop,
yep,
where you literally sat people down for long periods of times to be in intentional conflict. Yeah. You had a no profanity policy.
No profanity policy, and like there's, I mean, a lot of factors that go involved with that. But you know, one is just like, I'm not really trying to hear that all day. You know, it's things can get very hostile very quick in that type of environment, and if you can eliminate profanity for someone that's naturally, you know, has a profane mouth, like it allows them to be like a little more calm. Because like if I see a game that's going on between 2 guys and then like one dude like gets upset and like, you know, calls him a name or something, in a normal setting, you know, it's typically dudes just, they're whatever, they're having fun still, they're saying names, right? But in other settings, it's not always the case. Like that person actually did call that person that to offend them, and it's just easier, and it creates a better environment when you can just eliminate it both ways, so you know whether, hey, is this a safe conversation just between 2 friends, or is this somebody being a jerk to this guy? And we've found that to be really beneficial, because like there would be people that, I mean, they get like really upset and like throwing their cards down, this type of thing, or you're able to identify it more carefully and be like, hey, you know, is everything all right? You know, like, you know, not supposed to be any profanity. You know, do we need to talk about it or whatever? So, and we never like, we're like, hey, you can't be cussing, you need to get out of here. Like, it was always like more, let's step in and help this person out. Like, hey, this person's very clearly upset right now, and I can, as a shop owner, approach them because there's a rule set in place with no profanity. But as a loving person, I can sort of approach them in and be like, hey, is everything okay? Like, what's going on?
So, How do you take what you've done so far? Because I look at a personal opinion. I feel like True Haven was a success.
Hmm.
That's always been my take on it. Like, I thought that True Haven was a success, especially in the environment you were in. That you pulled off that kind of, you know, thing in our community, because when I, even now when I discuss having a comic book shop, I'm told you can't do that in this region because, you know, I'm faced with that. I feel like you were a success with that. You obviously are creating games and stuff, which doesn't seem like the easiest thing to do in this culture and climate. Because, I mean, it's one thing because, like, you see stuff that a lot of these board games and a lot of the community-based games that you see people getting into really do start out like this kind of situation where it's just some people that care about it just caring. Yeah. I mean, you look at things like Dice Throne and, you know, these other games, like literally all it takes is, you know, something to be put together well enough and people care
right.
that you end up investing in it. How does the success, you know, the failures and the response to the things that you put your passion into, how does that affect you? How does that affect your identity? How does that affect your desires to move forward in these things?
I think at the core of all of them, all of these endeavors has been the idea of community. Like I say, even with Potentia, we want to start off local. We want to start off in one card shop with a group of people and create that local fan base there and let it grow out from the Triangle area. And whenever we go to events or like Comic Cons or whatever, and we set up at our booth and, you know, we get to go around and we're checking out other people's booths, they have awesome stuff. They have beautiful games, beautiful artwork, is designed perfectly. But when you're at their booth, you feel like they're trying to sell you a product. And they are trying to sell you a product, and that's fair. We all are, right? But it's literally, that's just it. That's just kind of where the conversation ends. Like, yeah, here's our game. Check it out. You're welcome to play it. Here it is. It's available to buy. But, like, our booth, there's, you know, the typical setup is the table's at the very front. We're standing behind the table advertising. Well, we put our table at the back, all the way up against the back wall with marketing material on it. And then we've got a table where people right there at the front actually has four chairs around where people can come in and sit down and play with us or play with other people. And it's really more like, hey, come walk into our booth. Let's hang out for a little while, you know, have little snacks for them, like little like Tootsie Rolls and that sort of thing for them to just, hey, like come in. Let's enjoy each other. Let's have fun. I mean, like we're all gamers here. And let's just hang out and play our game. And it turns out, hey, you liked it, so you should definitely buy a copy of it.
Surprise!
Surprise! But, you know, it's just, it's better for them to actually have that. Because I guess you are creating that experience for them. And if they're just at a convention amongst 40 games, then they're not, they'll remember certain games that stuck out to them, sure. But if you're the only booth that's inviting them in and loving all them, having a good time with them, and you are, you know, that's what they're going to remember. They're like, oh, man, those Vandal guys were pretty cool. Like, yeah, I should check them out. You're like, I'd like to follow that. And that's not, like, a marketing thing, per se. It's just something that, I don't know, it's just has always been natural from the beginning to just, like, I don't want to stand at a Comic-Con for 8 hours and just stand behind a thing repeating the same thing over and over. Like, I want to be sitting down with somebody playing a game for 8 hours. Like, that sounds way more fun to me.
Okay. Let me ask you, I don't think I asked that in the introduction. What's your title with Vandal?
What's my title? I guess, goodness, what's my title? I'm in charge of the art side of stuff. I know that. I'm in charge of the design for Stormstrike. And me and Chandler both are in charge of the design for Potentia. But so far as title is concerned, like, is that CEO or whatever? Like, I guess, like, there's me and Chandler up there at the CEO or CFO level with each other. I'm not exactly sure which one falls into which category. But it's just three of us. And we just got an intern on with us, and she's doing artwork for us for Potentia. And we love her. We love what she's doing with us. But otherwise, yeah, titles, man. hey, if you can help out, like, look, guys, there's only three of us. Like, we need to all just be working together and making this thing happen. But I do know that I'm predominantly inside of art. Chandler's predominantly inside of finances, and Melanie's predominantly inside of organization.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can't just say I'm the owner.
Yeah, or... I'm the owner. Yeah, I mean, I guess we're all the owner. I don't know. We put in. We actually, yeah.
But that's not you. You're not just like flaunting like, Look, you peon.
Yeah.
I'm the owner.
No.
That's not you.
Part of the team.
Part of the team.
Yeah.
How has this stuff just shifted for, like, your desire for the future? Like, has there been any part of this process that's just put you off that makes you not want to do it?
Sometimes, yeah. Like, whenever you're advertising the game, you're playing with people, like, I mean, that everybody has their own opinions. You know, there's plenty of great games out there that I don't like. And I have to remind myself of that. That just because this person that played it, if they don't like it, doesn't mean that your game sucks. It just means that particular person doesn't like it. And because, like me, I'm just naturally a sensitive person. So, like, someone gives, like, bad feedback, I'm just like, oh, gosh, guys, the game sucks. Like, let's just throw in the towel. It's not worth it, blah, blah, blah. But then I have to remind myself, you know, of all the other good feedback stuff we've gotten. All the people who have, like, sat there, you know, been laughing and enjoying and taking pictures and just having a good time, you know, playing the game. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, there are people that like it. That's cool. So I think, yeah, just by demoing it and hearing bad feedback, it just naturally, I'm just like, oh.
Do you have any plans for being at upcoming shows?
No, because we did shows for a while and we realized we're a small fish in a huge pond. And that really wasn't working out for us very well. We got a lot of interest. We got a lot of people coming to us. We got, you know, a lot of, Facebook likes and that sort of thing. Got a couple hits on sales, but so far as the amount of money we're having to put into the event, just the turnaround rate, it just wasn't lining up. So what we decided, okay, we're going to take that step back. We're going to go away from the conventions, go away from the stuff that we're really pouring way too much money into, and we're going to set up a local card shop and host an event where we bring our games out, and it's just sort of just a game night, but with Vandal Games. And whether that's hosting a tournament for Potentia or just having a couple tables running Stormstrike or whatever it is, that's where we found ourselves at. So, no big events like that coming up, but be looking out for us, I guess, in the Raleigh area, particularly at Game Theory, Event Horizon, and Atomic Empire. And those are kind of the three card shops we're in contact with to try to set up those game nights.
Okay. Now, like, how much were you putting into cons and stuff that just felt like was too much? Like, is there, like, just for instance, like you say this, you know me, I'm always trying to, like, plug people into stuff to help. Like, for instance, I've got a couple shows coming up in the next month that are free to $20.
Free to $20 sounds like a nice price.
Like, you
sounds like a very nice price, yeah.
Like, you could get down with that.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, there's a Lexington, which is a show in Lexington.
Okay.
It's $25 for the table, and all of the table costs go to Humane Society and animal shelters. So I was like, you can get down with that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, seriously. And I think, like, just through this conversation, like, what you're talking about with this comic book shop, and then now what you're talking about with these comic cons that you're talking about, that have a lot better entry fee prices than what I'm used to hearing. It just sounds like you and I need to talk more. Like, we need to collab more. Like
we see each other on the regular, but we don't, our business lives and, you know, side hustle ministry lives and things don't always corroborate.
Yeah, we need to make this happen. Like,
but like, you know, I've got shows like that, and there's literally one in, on the 23rd of March in Sumter, South Carolina. It's a Saturday show. And it's on a college campus. Okay. And it's $40.
Wow.
Yeah,
again, $40 also sounds
super doable. But, you know, I would say that just because one of the things that I've seen so much is that, you know, there are shows that when I'm doing with Faith and Fandom and stuff that, it, like, hurt my soul.
Mm-hmm.
To pull the trigger on purchasing booth space.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I feel you.
Just looking, just from now till, like, man, July, I've got two shows that cost $300 and a show that costs $250.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like,
oh. Yeah. You know, I feel you. And like, the shows we're doing, we're right, I think, were that. I think at $200. Yeah. And like, that's like, okay, you know, this is right really pushing it for us, you know. And then this year, they stepped up to $300. And we're just like, you know. So we had kind of had that conversation. And like, yeah.
So you, I'm going to get you a con list. Of like of some super bootleg dirt cheap shows where you might literally be the only board game at.
Cool.
So we're gonna have to make that happen. Just for people that are, you know, gonna listen to this, that are gonna hear this, you obviously, your faith plays a role into what you're doing and the way you lead your life and everything, and you've taken some big risks that honestly turned around and, you know, worked out well. Mm-hmm. So what would your advice be from a nerd entrepreneur to a Christian to, like, what would your advice be to anyone sitting on, like, a notion or an idea or a dream that just hasn't practically stepped up to do this yet?
First off is, especially up front, don't expect a lot of money. Is kind of the first thing. I mean, that's even people that are business minded. Like, I think this thing is, before the first 3 years, you're not making any money, is what I've heard, you know. So coming in with that mindset, and is one, to continue to remind yourself of the passion of why you're doing it, that you love making games. So keep on making games. And also just love your clientele, love your people that are coming to your booth, love your people that are talking to you, and don't treat them, you know, like they're your paycheck. You know, don't treat them like, oh, this is the person I can get that $20 off of and that sort of thing, because that's not necessarily going to grow your business, and it's not going to grow your heart either. Because that person, if they have an awesome encounter with you, then not only are they hopefully going to buy the game because they like the game, but also they're going to want to follow you. They're going to want to check your stuff out. They're going to tell their friends, be like, hey guys, I just went to this really cool event, and this Vandal company had their booth set up where, like, I could just come in, like, they had like Tootsie Rolls and candy on the table, and like the game was just out, and like it was just so cool. Like, I got to play a game for free. I didn't have to buy it. Like, I got to just sit down and play. Well, you know, so you know, just doing that, I think, is a big takeaway. Because even at the end of the day, like, if you made zero sales, like, you had an awesome time. Like, you just spent 8 hours playing your game with people and just enjoying it.
That's one of the big things for me, is that I never started with Faith and Fandom with the intention of making money.
Mm.
Like, I legit started, you know, with the first book with the goal, I'm going to set up at one show, witness to some people, love some people in a nerdy fashion, and be done.
Yeah.
And then, like, doors kept opening. And here's the deal. Like, it's gotten me cool opportunities. It got me the screenwriting thing. It got me some speaking engagements. I've made some friends. I've married people. I mean, I've done a lot of good things. You know, it's opened a lot of doors for me. But, you know, I usually get in this funk after every book is published where I'm like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah,
I'm never doing this again.
That's the last one.
It's the last one. I'm super done. Like, the book title for this upcoming one was like the final chapter, but probably not. Like, I was like, that's what it was gonna be. I'm not doing that. It's gonna be like, oh look, another one. It's gonna be like the subtitle on it. But
that's
like,
funny.
You know, it's just one of those things.
I like the final chapter. It's very, like, playing off. I mean, like, you think of Final Fantasy, like, it, you know.
But
it's not
that
final.
That's actually why I postponed using that one.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm going to do Faith and Fandom 7.
Uh-huh.
But make it look like Final Fantasy 7. Because it's the same alliteration,
nice.
And everything.
So, like, you're already talking about another book.
You heard it here. But no, like, book 7 is legit going to look like Final Fantasy 7.
That's gonna be sick.
And cool. And which will be great, because if it plays out a year from now, the Final Fantasy VII remake might actually exist.
Mm, that would be pretty sick time, yeah. Yeah. You do like a pairing with GameStop, hey, you buy a copy of Final Fantasy VII, you get...
Bruh, if my local game... Because, like, if y'all know me, my local GameStop is my spot. I spend a lot of time there. If my local GameStop would carry my books, you know what? I bet they would if I really asked.
They probably would.
They
I could see that happen.
They in there selling world's finest chocolate. They can sell really, my books.
Like, they got it all at GameStop now. I went and like thought I was at Toys R Us.
Yeah. So I've been in Walmart. Like, they carried my stuff in Walmart.
That's awesome.
So, and Barnes and Noble. So
yeah,
and it's the second of Charles. GameStop should hook me up. But yeah. It's one of those things. Like, I do about 28 shows a year, like on average.
Mm-hmm.
I think I make money at two.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and saying that, like, there's a lot of capital. You know, I was saying maybe I can't afford to do a comic book shop, but then I realistically think about it. It's like, I can put, like, $500 to $1,000 worth of stuff into every show if I do it.
Yeah, it's true.
But,
it's so true.
But, you know, on average, most of these shows barely make their costs back for me.
Right.
And that's the thing. This has never been about the money or that. And usually Vincent and I, when we're at Boost, like the conversation always is, we had good conversations. Yeah. Like, that's our discussion. That's what we're saying. Regardless of whatever else happens.
Exactly.
We can sit back and say, we had good conversations. Yeah. Like, if we can go to a convention and have two legit conversations, I don't at all feel like it was a waste of time.
Yeah. And maybe that's for the actual marketing world. Maybe it's not the best advice. I don't know, because they're looking to make money. But fortunately, if you're looking for a ministry opportunity, like, just be yourself, go out into the world and do what you love and love on people. And if you don't make money, I mean, it's fine, you know. Just keep on doing it. Now, but I do think in the marketing world, there's something to learn from that, of just loving on your community and loving on your team. So
it makes a big difference when you're authentically, you're caring about people.
Right.
Well, it's like, for instance, there's an artist I've worked with, man, I don't know, for like 4 years now. You know, I don't mind shouting him out. He's a great artist in the Raleigh region. Lyle Pollard is one of my favorite con people.
Yeah.
Lyle and I have shared booth space side by side before. You know, we've hung out. He gave me a Castle Grayskull, like the OG He-Man Castle Grayskull.
That's pretty cool.
He's done artwork for me on stuff. But like, Lyle and I have been cool, and we've loved on each other for years. And he started reading my books this year. And he's like, oh man, these are good.
Like, that's slow impact.
Like, that's slow impact. Now, here's the thing. I didn't go into it like, you know, I'm hanging out with you to get you to read my books or to talking to you. Like, it's just like, I'm here to be here.
Yeah.
And I think that you can't do that in a business model.
Yeah.
But if what your goal is to actually impact people, I think it makes a big deal. And, you know, tabletop gaming folk are a special breed of people that automatically are open to the concept of sitting down and communicating for hours.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I stink at that. like, I bought Dice Throne the other day because I had points on Amazon.
it looks so beautiful, too.
Well, it's like that thing, you know, I think you might have saw it too, but that Love Thy Nerd was doing a raffle for $10 where you could win Dice Throne.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's a great idea. And then I'm like, I'm going to check my points on Amazon. Yeah. It's like, is it worth the $10 or not? But, you know, it's like, I opened it up. I'm like, oh, this is too much.
Yeah.
Like, that's my initial thoughts. Really? Like, I was like, I don't even want to read this booklet.
My goodness. Come on, man.
I'm like, there's too many pieces. I don't like it. Like, legitimately, it's like going to the dentist.
Yeah. And that's another thing, even with Vandal, that we make a big thing is like, we want our rule books to be cohesive. Like, just they read themselves, man. Like, Stormstrike is this little bitty wallet sized rule book that's literally four pages, like the front page and then the two in the middle and then the back. And like, that's because, like, yeah, people aren't trying to read a rule book for an hour before they play your game. So.
Like, I sat here last night in the, like, when I had some downtime and actually read through the book, and I'm still freaking clueless. Yeah. Like, I'm a hopefully pull out a YouTube video and get a tutorial.
Yeah, just
or
watch
something.
The tutorial. Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's one of the things I've liked about what I've seen you through this whole process is that, you know, you've done the things admirably, that what you're doing because you care, and you're not a outcome-based person.
Right.
And I think that that breeds the right outcome. And, you know, I hope, you know, and what we do with Faith to Fandom is the same concept, is that, you know, when we're beside people in Artist Alley, you know, usually by the end of the day, they're like, did you have a good day? And I'm like, yeah, I had a good day. Like, how much you make? I mean, yeah, that conversation.
That's the first question.
That's the first question. It's like, Vincent and I have a rule. We don't open our cash or check our sales until the show is over.
I like that.
If we're broke or we're not making any money. But then again, some shows are so slow.
Yeah, you know exactly
you know what's happened because one person bought a bookmark and that's been about it. It's good. So if you're a creator, if you're someone sitting on an idea, if you're nurturing a concept, literally, I meant this dude, like, with minimal resources, started two different companies that didn't fail.
Right.
And and has made impact. So I just wanted to, share some of Victor's story with you because I thought that's good and encouraging. And so if you want to find out more about what Victor is up to, he and his wife are doing some full-time ministry stuff, and you guys are raising support for where are you going?
We're going to the Philippines in May.
Okay. Yeah. They're currently raising support to go to the Philippines in May. And how long are you going to be there?
A month.
So they're doing a month worth of ministry in the Philippines in May. But they're also being, you know, moving towards missionary work and doing different missionary work here in the States as well on top of what they're doing. So if you want to check out Victor's stuff, you can find their page on Vandal Entertainment Studios on Facebook.
Yeah.
Do you mind if people, it's not like I have a million people that listen to this, but like you can try.
Half a million.
You can find Victor online, and or if you need to get in contact with him and you don't find his contact stuff, you can hit me up, and we'll go from there. But Victor, thanks for
hanging out
and chatting, and I hope you've enjoyed learning about Vandal Entertainment Studios and the glory that was True Haven, and I'll talk to you guys soon. Have a great day.